6 for Burlington, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. 36 in Milwaukee. The wind is calm. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 10 minutes after 8, The Morning Show with Greg Berg up next.
Support for The Morning Show comes from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911. A unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe. Andrea's, 2401 60th Street, online at andreasgifts.com. Support for The Morning Show also comes from the Carthage College Office of Continuing Studies, providing graduate and accelerated certification programs in education to start or advance career in teaching. Convenient evening and summer courses are designed for the working adult. More information is available at carthage.edu/grad. And we welcome you to the Tuesday Morning Show on WGTD-HD, your gateway to public radio. I'm Gregory Berg. Each day this week, we are going to be featuring an interview with a pair of candidates for the Racine Unified School District for the upcoming election in early April. And we are airing these in the order in which they were recorded. So on this morning show, Tuesday, we are airing the interview recorded with the two candidates for the 8th District of the Racine Unified School District, Matthew Hanser and Melvin Hargrove. The 8th District roughly includes the area of Horlick High School, for Gersted, for North Park, the village of North Bay, south of 4 Mile Road along Main Street, but not Wind Point. Again, the district maps are a little bit complicated, but that is roughly what we're talking about in terms of the 8th District. We're going to begin this candidates forum by asking each of our candidates to offer up their own introduction of themselves, who they are, where they come from, their own connection to the world of education, and or the reason for their interest in the Racine Unified School District and their desire to be part of the school board. And we'll begin at the top here with Matthew Hanser.
Good morning, Greg, and thank you for inviting Pastor Hargrove and I in for this conversation. I have a daughter who's a 7th grader at Gersted Agar Hall Middle School, and my son's a senior at Horlick High School. And I believe strongly in public education, which is why I'm choosing to run. I spent 13 years as a public school teacher working with at-risk children coming from situations of poverty or just kind of giving up on education, and so it was a calling to me to work with those children. Presently, I'm a Unified Services Director for the Illinois Education Association, and really that's a fancy word for a guy who helps teachers, administrators solve problems related to education. I work closely with superintendents of schools, board attorneys, principals, HR directors, and other important individuals involved in education for children.
Very good. Pastor Melvin Hargrove.
Greetings, Greg, and again, I also thank you for allowing myself and Matthew to be here today. I am Melvin Hargrove. I currently serve as senior pastor of Zoe Outreach Ministries in Racine, Wisconsin, the last 17 years. I currently am on the Board of Education for Racine, and I serve in the capacity at this point of board president. I was appointed in 2007 to the board and elected again in 2008 and then reelected subsequently 2011, 2014. I purposely and deliberately chose to stay here in Racine to raise my family, which I did. Been married for 28 years, and I have three children. All are grown and actually are... Two have finished college, and one will finish college eventually. We definitely pray, pray about that. I did graduate from St. Cat's in 1984, and I immediately went to the service, regular Army, and then subsequently U.S. Army Reserves, eventually serving my country until 2003 when I received a medical discharge from being deployed from Operation Enduring Freedom, Iraqi Freedom. I've been serving my country and this community for over 30 years, and I'll save the rest for later.
Very good.
All right.
It's good to have both of you here, and I want to mention to our listeners that it's gratifying to see the two of you with such a cordial, respectful relationship to one another, and in the current divisive political environment in which we find ourselves, this is really refreshing. So it's great to meet both of you and to have you here.
Thank you, Greg.
So often, candidate forums like this accentuate, as they probably need to, concerns about the school district, problems that are vexing, that require maybe complicated solutions. Let's begin in a more positive place. I would like each of you to outline what you would see as one or two areas of strength for the Racine Unified School District. What are one or two things that are worth celebrating as good accomplishments of the school district? Let's begin with you, Pastor Hargrove.
Thank you, Greg. Just a couple. I believe that when you look at our test scores, now the test scores are on the rise, the math and reading scores are on the rise. When it comes to our first, second graders, third graders, kindergartners are becoming more prepared for reading going into first, second grade, which is a good thing. We've actually even... and a couple of our grades have even met national average or actually exceeded national standard or national average as well in those areas. One more thing that I am definitely encouraged about and excited about is the high school transformation that's going on with the career pathways for the various academies in the schools, and how and how we are now pivoting and focusing now on more than just the college years, but also what happens if those individuals don't graduate and go to college, they still will be prepared for careers even in the community. So I'm excited about that because I see that we're moving in the right direction.
Hmm. Mr. Hanser.
There are three things I find very positive about the Racine community as a whole. Number one, the diversity. Having grown up in an urban area and living in Racine, I think the diversity is what makes our school strong. It exposes our children to people of all different experiences, and I think that that's something that is very positive for our children to experience on a daily basis. The second thing is that right now there's been a focus on the freshmen and making sure that they finish the first semester on track to graduate, and 94% of our students, freshmen presently, have 3 credits at the end of the first semester. That's great because that lowers the likelihood of the child's going to drop out and then not continue. And the third thing, and it's in the works still, is the Knapp Community School. Racine Unified needs to work closely with the community, and I think that that community school, working with our partners in the United Way, and bringing families into the education setting in a very positive way is something that our community should be proud of, and I'm very proud of the Racine Unified School District for undertaking that endeavor.
Let's talk about the way in which so often now the quality of education and the success of education is measured, that by standardized testing. What is your feeling about our dependence on and energetic focus on standardized tests and test scores? Do you feel like this is valid and worthwhile and, at least for the most part, positive? Or do you have concerns about our focus on standardized testing and test scores? And is this something which needs to be approached in any sort of different fashion? Mr. Hanser.
So I spent my 13 years in the classroom working with children at risk. And one of the things that I tried to help them do was to build self-confidence. I had children in my classroom who would perform marvelously on the daily tasks that we worked on together. But when they received the standardized test in front of them, they became nervous and they frustrated and struggled. So I think focusing on standardized tests, which are full of cultural bias, full of things that really don't measure what a child learns in the classroom, is not an adequate and appropriate way to measure two things. One, student growth, because there are other ways that children learn other than taking a test. And also teacher improvement, educator improvement. And so relying on a test that a child, depending upon what their morning was like or their afternoon or their weekend may have been like, and using that to determine how we are progressing in education is concerning. It puts a lot of pressure on children and families and takes away from the craft and the joy in teaching.
Hmm. Pastor Hargrove.
Thank you, Greg. I will agree with Matthew on that, and I'll go a step further, especially with the one issue of the culturally biased test that actually happens, and realizing that many times when you teach to the test, you really miss teaching to the student or teaching to the child, and you miss the ability to interact with that child in a way where that child can be educated versus simply just teaching for a test. What I mean by that, and I always go with the definition of education from the word educare, which means to pull that which was from within out so you know who you are. And I believe that teaching to the test won't allow that to happen. Teaching to the test also won't allow for the different culturally responsive pedagogy to take place so that that person can learn, because people come from different backgrounds, different areas, different environments, and they have different ways of thinking. A standardized test will not measure one. It only measures one way of thinking as opposed to measuring a multiple different ways of thinking and a multiple different ways of processing. And so, therefore, that's why I would be against standardized tests. One more reason is because, you know, they're always changing anyway. I mean, at this point, we have, what, two or three different, you know, state tests that's coming, getting ready, you know, and we're getting ready to actually try to, you know, have another test statewide that, you know, eventually, you know, you're trying to teach to something that's continually changing. And so that also puts a burden on the teachers as well, you know, as the education system of trying to keep up with whatever the state or the federal government is saying is the standard. Hmm.
Another predominant trend in current education is a real focus on education serving young people as career preparation, and that there are more and more efforts at a younger and younger age to try to help focus young people onto career paths, to be thinking about what they're going to do after they're done with school. Do you see this as an entirely positive development, or do you feel like the balance of education in terms of its purpose needs to be something other than that, or more than that, more than preparing a young person for adulthood and whatever career they're going to have? Pastor Hargrove.
Yes, to the first part of your question, I believe that. I believe that, for instance, just take me for example. When I graduated high school, I went straight to the military. I went to the military because I wasn't prepared for college. And I didn't realize it then, but I know it now. I wouldn't have made it through college because my mind was not formed, and it was not mature enough at that point to handle the structure that college would. I needed the military. What I found is, and I'm so excited about, that's why I keep going back to, I'm excited about what's happening with our high school transformations, because now we're talking about the career / college readiness. I was at the expo the other day where the students came in to meet the various businesses around the city. It was phenomenal. I saw children's eyes lighting up when they realized that, hey, I can actually do this and take this pathway, and I can be employed right here in Racine with this company based on what I love to do. So everyone, you know, I believe that everyone can learn, and I believe that, you know, everyone has the capacity to learn. I don't believe that everyone is going to go to college. I didn't go to college until after I finished the military. And so I believe that going down the pathway of the whole career and college readiness is the way we need to go. And it goes back to even back in the 60s and 70s where you had shop class and everything else, as well as you had the academic, you know, the academic challenges for college.
Hmm. Mr. Hanser.
So back in 1983, at the ripe old age of 13, I made a decision to become a history teacher. My father was a teacher for 39 years, and at that point in time, he'd been teaching about 15 years. I promptly declared a business major when I attended Whitewater and after graduating high school in 1988, and then decided I was going back in education. I think very few kids at the age of 13, my daughter is going to be in eighth grade next year and will be planning her high school path. I think very few kids have in mind what they think they want to do when they grow up. Many of the things that children will do for careers have not even been invented yet. And that's been kind of the story we've heard for the last 15 years. The jobs of tomorrow aren't even there yet. We don't know what fields they're going to be in. So I have a concern with dedicating the three comprehensive high schools to being solely career academies. I think we should focus on a liberal arts perspective of what we have now, which is where children also have the option of going through and taking their math and their science and their language arts and their humanities courses and social studies so that they can go and do college, they can go and do a career. They have those things filtered in there, the shop classes, the woodworking, the things that were available when Pastor Hargrove and I were attending high school. But I think that focusing on what you're going to do when you grow up, it's great. It's lovely when children can say, when I grow up, I'm going to be a veterinarian. That is awesome. We don't hear that enough from children these days. I just don't want to see our kids getting pigeonholed into something and not understand that they can make a pivot. All of us make a pivot in life at some point in time. So I think it's important that we educate the whole child and that we focus on finding what really resonates with them.
For those of you just joining us on today's morning show, this portion of the morning show, we are speaking with the two candidates for the 8th District of the Racine Unified School District, Matthew Hanser and Melvin Hargrove. We are posing to them a series of questions related to public education. We will be posing similar questions to pairs of candidates that you will hear from in each of the next morning shows this week as well. Related to the question of academies in each of the high schools, one component of that particular shift involves a move towards block scheduling, which is something which has been a practice widely adopted by school districts across the country. But there is some difference of opinion over whether or not block scheduling is in fact the most effective way to educate young people. I'm asking actually two questions, and the first question is more in general, as a matter of principle. Has nothing to do with implementation or specifically the Racine Unified School District. In a general sense, are you a fan of block scheduling? Why or why not? Let's see, did we leave off with Mr. Hanser? So I think you begin.
So I was a middle school teacher, and I didn't teach in the block. But from talking to my colleagues who had taught in the block, some of them found it to be very good, and others found it to be a challenge just because of the length of time that they were teaching one thing in 90 minutes to some students who may not be very engaged. So I am in favor of Racine Unified specifically shifting to a block schedule. I have said consistently and will continue to say that I do not think it should be implemented next year, though. You're talking about rebuilding a curriculum. We're talking about bringing academies in, which is a curricular shift, and block scheduling is a curricular shift. Staff have not received the professional development necessary to adequately implement this or appropriately implement this, and we need to be successful. Racine Unified is in the crosshairs of our community for not doing things correctly. We receive a lot of criticism, and members on the board know that because they hear it on a regular basis. So when you talk about slowing down, it's not slowing down to prevent it from happening, but to make sure that our teachers and our other support professionals in the building are prepared to help our children make that transition.
Pastor Hargrove, let's talk about both things, in general principle block scheduling. Are you a fan? And then what about the matter of implementation of block scheduling for the Racine Unified School District?
Thank you, Greg. I will also agree in this instance with Matthew. I also support block scheduling. I've heard some teachers that I know in this district and other districts know who are a fan of block scheduling because of the 90-minute piece. And the reason why is because not only do you have this main instructional piece of it, but then you also have the piece where you can use project-based learning with it, and you can also use that time to explain even more what's happening in that class or in that period. You also can look at the fact that with block scheduling, when it comes to the 90 minutes, you know, you become more creative on how you're going to actually teach that class, teach that period as well. So I agree that block scheduling, I believe, is, you know, the best way to go at this point in time. The other thing is, real quick, and I'll go to get to the other point, is that there's also that even more time for that teacher to engage that student, even sometimes on a more one-on-one basis, if there's more help that's necessary and needed for that. Now, I will respectfully disagree, though, with Matthew on this piece, and I believe that, and the only reason why is because I believe that the block scheduling is necessary at this point for the successful implementation of the career pathways and the academies of Racine Unified School. And the reason why I believe that is because after being a part of a group that went down to Nashville to look at how they implemented the block scheduling and implemented their career pathways, they were very adamant at the fact that we needed to have the block scheduling in place in order for the high schools to successfully engage or implement and then engage in the high school transformation. So in that sense, I believe that it's necessary and needed. I also believe that with proper implementation, I will agree, though, with Matthew, that is that we really have to have the proper, you know, development, the proper professional development of our teachers to do so. But then there's one other thing, and that is you're not really rebuilding a curriculum. You're actually taking the curriculum you already have and teaching it in a different way. And I don't know if that's different or not. I'm not a teacher, but I know that to rebuild a curriculum or to take what you have and expand it may be a little bit different.
One consequence of block scheduling appears to be, at least, that at least when it comes to high school teachers, that each of them will be teaching one more class, one more group of 25 or more students, and all of the responsibilities that come with that in terms of instructing them, evaluating them, grading them, and so on. And it appears that as a consequence of that, some teachers who are currently involved in enrichment or extracurricular activities are planning to drastically scale back or perhaps even eliminate that out of their load as a reflection of this added responsibility that is going to be a consequence of block scheduling. Do you see this as a significant problem that needs to be addressed somehow, or do you not feel that this is a matter of significance that warrants concern?
Well, I mean, it wants concern, especially if the teachers are concerned about it, because they're the ones, they're the troops with the what I call boots on the ground in the classroom. So if there is a concern in there, I mean, that concern need to be dealt with. They need to be addressed, and it should not be looked over, glanced over lightly. And so, therefore, there needs to be a way through conversation, through professional development, to assure the teachers of the time necessary that they would need, even though you have the extra class that will be added. So I would say that if they believe it's a concern because they are in the classrooms and they see on a day-to-day basis what happens, then I believe that administration needs to take that concern very seriously and then figure out the best way to marry that concern with some type of solution so that our teachers are not overburdened.
Hmm. That was Pastor Hargrove. Mr. Hanser?
So this goes directly back to why Pastor Hargrove and I disagree on this. Part of this process, and part of the reason why I am advocating for not implementing this until 2017-18, is so we can address these concerns adequately. I know that teachers have spoken to administrators, board members, and other people in the community about wanting to implement block scheduling with fidelity. Extracurricular and co-curricular activities are vital for a child to be successful in school many times. We have a lot of children who participate in extracurricular activities because that's the driver. That's what gets a child there. They're involved in an art club. They're involved in the musical, those sorts of athletics. That motivates them. So losing that would have a negative impact on our advances we made with student achievement. again, it's why I want to slow down and look at all the options available so that we can implement this with fidelity. Does it mean we need to add staff? I don't know. Does it mean that we have to look at the school day? I don't know. But those are questions that should be asked and answered. And that is, again, why I'm advocating for us to have this discussion, because it's going to impact parents, children, teachers, administrators, employers in the community who rely upon teenagers to work at the Pick and Save, bagging groceries, or washing the car, scrub it up like my son does. You know, it's going to impact that. So we really need to think about the long-term impact this could have on our community.
One reality that the Racine Unified School District is contending with, as our public school districts across the state, is the reality of vouchers and the fact that more and more students are leaving Racine Unified to attend private and parochial schools through the voucher system. Two-part question. First of all, are you, at least in general, a fan, a supporter of the voucher system as it is currently constructed? And part two, whether or not you favor this voucher system, what do you think the Racine Unified School District's response to it, response to this new reality, needs to be? Mr. Hanser.
I am not a supporter of voucher schools. We have seen it start to really corrupt the public education system in Milwaukee, where it's been around for about 25 years, in Cleveland. It's going to have an impact on Racine Unified. It impacts budgets tremendously because the school district still has to provide certain services to those children. And they deserve those services, special education, transportation. They deserve those. That's our responsibility. The concern I have with vouchers specifically is that we're trying to fund two systems. And it's another system that does not show any significant change in student performance, and they're not accountable to the public that funds them. And we have heard over and over from our community that they want accountability. Yet we're required to have vouchers in Racine Unified that the public's not aware of the accountability piece. In terms of what should RUSD do, I think that there are some things that are already happening, and I do not believe that by creating the voucher system you say, well, now we've created competition, which makes RUSD better. I don't believe in that. I think that RUSD, irrespective of vouchers being in existence, needs to make some changes, and there are some positive things happening. There is a discussion about career academies. There's a discussion of block scheduling. There is looking at how do we work more closely with our business community. I think that is what we just need to keep doing. We need to look at the things that we're doing right and that our community is responding to positively, and figure out how to build on those things.
Pastor Hargrove.
I should have been the first one you asked that question to. That way I could have said everything that Matthew just said. I am. I'm not in favor of vouchers. I haven't been in favor of vouchers since I've been on the school board. I believe that vouchers should not be given to, you know, individuals to be able to help, you know, support private schools and everything, because you take the money and go elsewhere. And I've been beat up for this when I first started running for school board, because my children eventually went to St. Cass in high school. But I paid for their education. I took an extra job and paid for the education. So if I chose for them to go there, then I believe it's incumbent upon me to be able to pay that and not look for taxpayer dollars to do so. I really believe that, because I believe in public education. But at that time, there were some other things going on that I chose to do so. And I've gotten beaten up about it and still get beat up about it, but I do not, you know, at all regret doing so. I just want people to understand that vouchers, to me, will continue to, I think, degrade public education. What can RUSD do? The response is to what Matthew was just saying. We've got to continue to get better, and we've got to have we've got to be able to compete on a better level, on a higher level as well. One more thing, real quickly, when I talked about public the vouchers beginning to erode public education in a sense. Because there's no accountability to these schools that get the vouchers, then they get the vouchers, then they can either keep the child in the school or say that we don't want the child and bring the child back to public education, where we still have to educate that child, whether or not we have the money there or not. The other thing is that there's no accountability. There's no accountability for these schools when it comes to how do you measure the success. And again, Milwaukee is very a good example of where vouchers have not worked, and in some cases they have, but in most cases they have not worked with the voucher schools.
In the Racine Journal Times Sunday, March 20th, the top headline was Ramac putting together or presenting the possibility of a very comprehensive, long-range plan for the community at large, and specifically for the Racine Unified School District, and couched in strong language, which, among other things, suggested that such a plan should be constructed and then very strictly adhered to. That is, the plan implemented with no option for altering it along the way should circumstances maybe suggest modification. What is your response to Ramac's proposal? Do you feel good about it, or do you have concerns? Pastor Hargrove.
I actually stand in support of that proposal, and here's why. There's always things that can be tweaked and made better. But the reason why I stand in support of the proposal, based on just the surface-level understanding that I have of it right now, is that at some point we have to get to a point where we as a community, we're moving forward together. And right now, when I see the partnership with business community and also the school district and then the faith community in the school district and then the community itself in the school district, I believe that we're trying to move this thing forward together as one. People have given Ramac a bad a bad rap because, you know, they say it's the business community. Well, we have to understand that we're trying to graduate children that literally will become employees in these businesses that are in this city. And so I believe that Ramac, as well as others, have a part at the table to help us understand what is their need for to have, you know, employees who will be able to stay with them, you know, for years to come. Real quickly, there was I was told maybe 2 years ago that we have about maybe a 5 to 10 year window to be able to have you know, people employable so that they can start taking over the baby boomers and everything else. The question is, will we be ready for that? The reason why I say that is with the plan, I believe the plan keeps us focused as a community in one direction, and it prohibits people coming in, you know, and just, okay, instead of us going straight, we're not going to go left, we're not going right because I have a better way of doing it. I believe that if we can adopt that plan together and say we're going to move this thing together as a community because our education is so important, why not have that type of vision for the community as a whole?
Mr. Hanser.
I support a plan, and I support a vision. And I don't know enough about the plan to comment specifically on it, but there was a part in that article that was very concerning, and you spoke to it, Greg, this idea that we can't alter that plan. The Board of Education has a responsibility to assist the administrative team and come up and implement policies that meet the best interests of our students, our staff, and our community. And implementing a plan without the ability for that board to make changes as things progress seems to me to really render the purpose of a Board of Education useless. I am not a business person, but my grandfather was for many years. And in the conversations we had, I don't remember Grandpa ever telling me, you know, Matt, we have a plan and we're going to stick to it regardless of what happens. And so I think that the main concern I have is this idea that as the stakeholders change within the community, we're going to stick to a plan, even if it's maybe not the best thing for us to do.
One of the most pervasive challenges in modern public education, and very specifically with teachers, is the fact that you have a wide swath of students with whom you are entrusted to teach, and in many cases, students who walk into the door bearing enormous burdens and fragility, mental and emotional, sometimes very, very serious discipline problems. And in that environment, we are in a situation at the moment in which teachers are very, very tightly limited in terms of how they are able to respond to those enormous challenges in the classroom with certain students that might be a very disruptive force, or in other ways make the job of teaching quite challenging, even more so than it would otherwise be. What is your sense of the district's current policy regarding this? How can they most effectively deal with such students, and to what extent do teachers need to be either more tightly controlled or given more freedom in terms of dealing with those kind of issues of discipline problems? Mr. Hanser.
Well, there are a couple things that the school district is already implementing, which I think will have a positive impact. We're having mental health clinics in a couple of school buildings. And we know there's a price for that, and I think it's a price that is well worth paying. It helps our community as a whole. The other thing is the Knapp Community School, again, trying to bring our community together to support our children. I spent 13 years teaching at-risk children, students who come in who may not have slept the night before, eaten breakfast, may not have even slept anywhere. They may have just been up all night, dealing with very, very difficult situations. The last thing that child wants to do when they come in the front door of a building is to learn. They may be there because there's an adult in that building that they love and they respect and they want to be with during that day. You think of the kindergartners who give their teacher a big hug in the morning because that is the person that makes their day bright. So I think that, to me, it's a whole child approach. The mental health portion that the school district has begun to undertake, trying to find those relationships within the community for mentoring. You know, Kenosha Unified School District for a number of years had a partnership with CABA, the Kenosha Area Business Alliance, where they had business people come in and read with children and do some of those positive things. I think if we can make those connections of our positive role models in the community, people who are in the faith community, people who are in education, people who are in business community, to come in and help give those children the support they need, I think that those are some of the things that we should be exploring.
Pastor Hargrove.
Thank you, Greg. I agree with Matt in the fact that at this point we are addressing some issues, the mental health issues, mental health in two of our schools at this point. And the other thing is that Dr. Gallion, who is currently the assistant superintendent, deputy superintendent in the schools, he's also presented a three-year plan to the board as well to be able to understand and deal with some of the climate in the classrooms as well with that. I think that to your question as well, that I believe that the teachers definitely need to be supported by the principals in those schools, because again, they're the ones that are in those classes and they're seeing these things happen. But I want to also say that we have to be careful that some of this is about cultural sensitivity as well, and some of it really is about discipline, and we have to be able to understand the difference between the two. Our church, a few years ago, we tried to implement what we call, it was from Dr. Evans in Texas, and basically it was, we tried to get mentors into the school, into Knapp School. Well, it failed only because I didn't have enough people to train to be mentors. And so I believe that the community has to partner with the schools. Part of the problem, I believe, and I'll probably lose some votes when I say this, but part of the problem is that we expect our teachers to be everybody, to be everything, the sociologist, the psychologist, the parent, the disciplinarian, and then still teach as well. Well, I believe that a part of the partnership has to be also our faith community. For instance, in my church, I need to start teaching our families, what does a dynamic family look like? What can you give that child that will help them succeed when they get to school? See, that's a conversation that some people don't want to have. But we have to have the conversation as well, too, because I don't believe that a child, that a teacher can be everything and all things to a child. And that's part of the problem is we have to understand how do we get that child more prepared before, so when they even get to the school, are they ready to learn? Are they ready? Are they in a mindset to be able to receive what the teacher has as well? Mm-hmm. So it's a complicated issue, and it's going to be a complicated solution.
We have time to hear from each of you briefly on what you feel are the particular gifts or perspectives or life experiences that would make you an effective member of the Racine Unified School District's school board. Pastor Hargrove.
Well, again, thank you once again, Greg, for allowing us to be here and just to share, you know, what I believe. You said something earlier as well that about our being able to be cordial and yet be disagreeable. I believe that individuals are just that. They have different concepts. They have different ideas. And so, therefore, I still believe that we can still respect each other in order for that, and still get along, even though we disagree philosophically. But Dr. King said, education must enable a man to become more efficient to achieve with increasing facility the legitimate goals of his life. I believe these words with all of my being and want to be an intricate part of making this happen for our students at RUSD. I believe that my board experience and my passion for education, plus my ability to look at everything and look at all sides of the matter before I actually come to a decision, are some of the qualifications that I have to be a board member. I think that, and then also I believe coming to this with the only agenda of making sure our children are successful is what I believe helps me as well. And then I believe that we've seen some graduation rate increase. We've seen various things happen. We see some improvement in the schools, and we're currently building these three new schools, and we're even reaching out more to the municipalities to get them more involved, Sturtevant, Caledonia, and ultimately we're looking at Wind Point, what's the other one I'm thinking, Elmwood, Elmwood Park Village, as well as North Bay Village, to reach out to them as well, to meet with them as a board to see what their concerns are. So I think we're doing some good things, and I would love to continue to do those good things and continue to move the district forward. Thank you, Greg.
Mr. Henser.
So every day, as part of my work, I work with people who work with children. And I work with those individuals to try and find solutions to the problems that they're facing in their classrooms or in their school districts. And we do not necessarily agree all the time, but I find that about 90% of the time we do. And so I work hard with those individuals to bring them together, to find common ground, to find the right words to use as we move forward together to get progress made in schools. I have two kids. One's graduating and going on to hopefully a long career serving our country. And I have a seventh grade daughter. I have many friends who have children who live in Racine community and send their children to Racine Unified Schools. I plan to live here until the day that somebody says I can't live here anymore. And that's not my ultimate decision. Pastor Hargrove would understand that.
Yes, sir.
But I also think that I know I have the ability to encourage and support an open dialogue with our teachers, our educational support professionals, our community, whether it's the business community or individuals who no longer have children or never had children attend our schools. I want to have a dynamic conversation in Racine about how we move forward together.
Melvin Hargrove and Matthew Henser, the two candidates for the 8th District of the Racine Unified School District. Gentlemen, thank you so much for what I think has been a very, very interesting and helpful conversation about something so very important, the educating of our young people in our public schools. Thank you so much for your concern over this important issue, and thank you for being here for this Candidates Forum on WGTD.
Thank you, Greg.
Thank you, Greg.
I'm Gregory Berg. We will have similar candidate forums each day this week. Tomorrow will be the Candidates Forum for Julie McKenna and Kimberly Plocky, and similar forums will be broadcast on Thursday and Friday as well. The time is 8:53 here on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. Anyone who wants to better understand the issue of racism in America should seek out a powerful book by racial justice educator and writer Debbie Irving. In her book, Waking Up White, she explains some of the ways in which she came to recognize certain racist attitudes in herself, which she had never imagined were there. I think as I read your book and thought about the kind of racism which it is discussing, and it is, I mean, I suppose in some ways racism is racism, but it's one thing when it plays out in the Deep South and involves terrible acts of violence, burning crosses on someone's lawn, and sometimes involving even brutal murder and so on. I mean, that is one way in which racism plays out, and the good guys and the bad guys are pretty easy to identify. And we certainly don't think of ourselves as being on the side of the fence with these monsters who do these monstrous things. It's another thing when we're talking about racism that, in a sense, is much more civilized, much more well-behaved, maybe even polite on the surface. And yet, at the heart of it is this same notion which drives it all of white superiority. And because it's something we are less aware of, it's probably even, in a sense, more important to talk about that and write about that.
Yeah, and I think that I did myself a real disservice by, and, you know, I'm not sure what else I could have done, because I was really behaving in the way I was socialized, thinking and acting in the way I was socialized to think and act. But I did myself a real disservice by thinking the South were the bad guys and that the North was somehow not complicit. You know, even if we go back to slavery, the North was completely complicit in slavery because all of the financial institutions that were developing, everything that was going on in the North was happening because of the economy that was being built on the South and on the backs of enslaved Africans. So at every stage, really, through history, when you really start digging, you go, oh, man, no, I can't believe that. So there's so much to learn. There's so much awareness to raise. When you talk about, you mentioned something about nice, I can't remember, I have a chapter in my book called The Culture of Niceness. One of the most unexpected ways I began to recognize that I was contributing to the problem is that I was raised to really not rock the boat. The conflict was something to be avoided. And I developed this just extraordinary antenna, as many Americans do, that when you start to get into that tense area in conversations, you steer the conversation elsewhere. And you think about what that means for people who are experiencing some kind of a marginalization or disadvantage, whether it's race, whether it's someone who's living with disabilities and would love to see some changes around that, or whether it's around sexual orientation, whether it's around class oppression. There are all these ways that people get marginalized, and then people who are in the dominant group who have been trained not to see that complaining and as some kind of a moral failing or a social faux pas, it gives no voice to the people whose voices we most need to hear to create an equitable America. Mm.
Debbie Irving's book is called Waking Up White and Finding Myself in the Story of Race. The book is available now in paperback from Elephant Room Press. I'm Gregory Berg. Once again, a reminder that all this week we will have candidate forums for the Racine Unified School District School Board. Next week, we'll turn to other matters, including a conversation on Monday with a very talented musician by the name of Moria Smiley, who is coming to Carthage College. And next Tuesday, we'll be talking to Patrick O'Donnell, the author of a marvelous new book called Washington's Immortals, The Untold Story of an Elite Regiment Who Changed the Course of the Revolution. This is a group from Maryland who played an enormously pivotal role in the young country of America winning the Revolutionary War against the British, a largely untold story, but now known to us because of author Patrick K. O'Donnell. You'll hear that story 1 week from today. The Morning Show is archived on our website, WGTD.org. Click on Talk. Widespread fog is finally giving way to sunshine, and it's going to be a very pleasant day with a high of 56 degrees inland, a little cooler near the lake. Mostly cloudy by tonight with a low of 40 degrees, a cloudy day tomorrow with a 60% chance of rain. Tomorrow's high, 59 degrees, mid to upper 60s for a high on Thursday, again with a 60% chance of rain. A little cooler on Friday with a high of only 46. This is WGTD HD.